Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and as promised, Amy Hamilton with us. We have become quite big fans of Amy Hamilton around here, and I'm delighted that she came all the way to California and is in studio with us for this hour. She's a linguist and a researcher, and she's been teaching in college and all that, but she's what we particularly appreciate about Amy, who's the author of a book called My Father Gives Me Bread. Is her understanding of our current cultural crisis. That's what we come to you for help with. Amy Hamilton, thanks for being here.
Oh, it's an honor to be here in person. I'm so glad to meet you in person. Thank you, Cy.
And the airlines treated you okay today?
Yes, they treated me as well as they could with a little mechanical mishap. That's fine.
Yeah, we were going to have you on last hour.
Yes.
But this will still work for your schedule.
Absolutely,
I have lived my whole life, I'm 61, and I've lived my whole life in the midst of the sexual revolution, my entire life. And so I guess the sexual revolution, you know, you could go back to the 1920s and the advent of the big movies, the studios and all that. You could go before that in some ways. But really, the 60s is a big turning point. So let's call it 60 years of the sexual revolution. If I could, I'd just start by asking you, how's that going? I mean, as far as you're a researcher, you work on those things. How's the sexual revolution going for the human family?
I think that we've sown the wind and we're reaping the whirlwind. And it's literally in the whirlwind contains, you know, emptiness of the children that were never allowed to even be born, not just through the destruction of abortion, but just through the closing of the womb and the closing of the heart to say no to the blessing of children. But also, I mean, it's gotten to the point where, again, it's filled with the fragmented identities of our sons and daughters that refuse to call themselves either.
This is something that I've really learned from you in our last conversation and have had time to think about this phrase you use, fragmented identities. What happened to the human identity as a consequence of the sexual revolution?
Well, I think that the expressive individualism that so many have written about in the cultural shift away from family, you take the self out of a mooring of an individual located within a family system. Kathleen Pacolick wrote a beautiful article on just the relationship of dependencies that is the truth of the human condition, that actually our period of independence, even across the lifespan, is actually not that long.
No.
And we presume upon it, even in terms of like assuming physical health, assuming that we're not going to be disabled in an accident, things like that. So it's a really beautiful article, but just that we're born into a family and that family in a state of dependency, and those relationships, then we're raised and we're formed with the responsibilities and those relational formations, and then that. Creating another family unit, that used to be the passage of the human person, right? That's the trajectory in every human society. The maturation of males and females led to new marital unions, new families. I was just reading some of the research on, you know, same-sex marriage out of, and one of the earlier articles that was talking about the Scandinavian data, one of the Scandinavian researchers made the observation that perhaps same-sex marriage was not the biggest revolution. The biggest revolution was that marriage was no longer the maturation point of the human person.
Yes.
Of young people, that we had entered a phase of society economically, in terms of productivity, and in terms of medical technology to overcome the consequences of the sexual revolution. That's my words, not this researcher's words. But again, contraception and effective treatment of sexually transmitted diseases, where we could individually express ourselves and move to that atomistic, I am an individual with my individual pursuits. And that was the biggest change. And so you just see, kind of as we're reaping this whirlwind, there's actually fewer and fewer people even in the mix.
Yeah.
As fewer families form, and then just all the alternate possibilities of creating human beings. There's a fragmentation at every level, right? So we separate sex from, we separate sex from marriage, and we separate marriage from childbearing, and then we separate childbearing from sex. So there's just an increasing number of ways to be pulled apart.
So when you talk about this fragmentation that has happened, it seems like, almost to me in my mind now looking at it in retrospect, like an arrow pointing towards the transgender movement, because that is the ultimate fragmentation. The person is no longer even associated with their body.
Right, right. And I think that it would be very prescient to have seen that. I certainly wouldn't have seen that, right?
I didn't see it coming.
When someone sees an arrow, I think there were probably some prescient individuals who could see that arrow. I couldn't see it. But if the human person becomes the master of his or her own destiny in every possible way, then it is actually a logical extension of, if I can redefine the body in terms of how my body is ordered to, interact sexually, and if we can do things, and if we can equate things and want to make things equal, that clearly certain body parts are not designed, they're not part of the reproductive system, right? And to use them in a sexual way actually harms the body. So if we're going to, give moral affirmation and societal approbation for that, then why can't I, redefine how the sexual parts are even supposed to be ordered? If I am my own master, either God is God, and if the human person is God and Lord of himself, then he can self-define,
But we're not. But here's the thing, though, because I think many people listening, and I hope that some of these folks will call, if you're listening and this is your view, 888-318-7884, they will say, look, the Catholic Church is standing against what really has been a process of liberation. And that there's something in us that's backward looking or nervous or afraid or controlling. And so we just won't accept all the liberation and queerness and transgender, all that stuff is just people being liberated to be who they are. Now, I think from the conversations we've had before, Amy Hamilton, our guest, you might go, your response, let me just guess at your response, would be, look at the results of what has happened. Is that liberation?
That's definitely one of my responses.
Okay, very good.
Right.
Yeah, so give me your full responses, if you would.
Well, I think that we do look at the results, right? So we can say, has the sexual revolution led to human flourishing?
Mm-hmm.
And what we see is that it's led to, there are higher levels of anxiety, there are higher levels of depression, there's higher levels of suicidality. There are, fewer children being born. There's greater infertility. This, we've demanded sterility to our sexual acts. We demand, decades of sterility. And then we demand to get pregnant, once or twice, on demand when we want. And this is just, we're not God, but we try to act like it. But we try to, the greater fabric of what's going on, the tapestry that we've woven, is distorted and is not leading to the kind of flourishing in terms of what is a human being made for. I mean, that's one of the things, is that you can look at disease rates. Technology continues to overcome some sexually transmitted diseases, and there's always more.
But it's an endless battle, because this is what I learned from you. This is not what the human body was made for.
Right.
So you're trying to use the body in ways that it was not made for, like, for example, multiple partners.
Exactly.
Well, now you've exposed yourself to all kinds of problems, pathogens, infections, diseases that if you would just admit that's not what my body was made for, you might not need the advanced antibiotics that we now have.
Exactly. And now that we're getting the antibiotic resistant strains of these STDs, you know, but I guess what I'm saying is, like, so you can look at the results, but if a person says, but I'm happy and this is the way I want to live, and I'm happy with the way things are going, again, from a Christian point of view, there is a God to whom we will give account of our lives. There is a moral order. There's a way to get life wrong, even if we're satisfied, right? Because there's pleasure in sin for a season, and some of those seasons can last a long time. And so I just, I don't know if I said this last, we talked a long time last interview, but I just keep thinking of the parable in Luke where the man is so satisfied with his...
Yeah, we just had that reading.
Yeah, exactly. So right. Satisfied with the way his life turned out. You know, he's like, oh my gosh, I've been so successful. I'm going to tear down my barns. I've got to build bigger ones. And I'm going to have such a great life and an ease of retirement. If he had been administered one of these social science surveys, right?
Yes.
How satisfied are you with that? You know, look, so let's administer a social science survey to, you know, the actress who said how happy she was to have had her abortion because she wouldn't have had her award. She would have checked, I'm very satisfied with my choice, you know?
Yes.
But there's an objective reality, like you will give an account of your life, and you've actually made soul diminishing, harmful, you know, choices. And if you don't repent, there's going to be a reckoning, right? But regardless, there's a diminishment. An acting award is not worth sacrificing the life of a child. So I guess
no,
I'm just saying,
it's like
so,
we can see that if it's like, you know, Hitler says, I've got the Sudetenland. Well, we'd say, well, it's not worth it for what you paid for it. I mean, in the destruction of world peace. But somebody goes, I got an Academy Award, and and killing my child was the means. We don't have the same moral. I guess it's because we're so complicit in the whole abortion thing as a society. But we don't go, well, wait a second. Just because you got what you wanted,
right,
doesn't mean what you did was right.
Right, right. And again, the other thing is that the person who's not formed and not rich in God, not become, you know, the union with God is our goal, right? And our destiny in Christ. And, you know, every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. So we're all going to meet him, but we're made to know and be known by him. And so, again, the person who thinks they're flourishing in their career or with their wealth or with their sexual exploits, whatever is giving them pleasure, they don't even know what they're really made for. So we're not an accurate judge. It's kind of like when C.S. Lewis wrote, you know, we're messing around with mud pies and with sex and drink because we don't know what is meant by, you know, an invitation to a holiday at sea where children playing in the mud who don't want to leave the mud pies because this is where we're messing around when the unseen is more real than the seen, and we're made for spiritual, you know, union with God. And I love the Viktor Frankl quote, you know, you can't actually pursue happiness. Happiness must ensue by giving yourself to something outside and greater than yourself. I mean, this is just human wisdom. This humans, right. We have a nature and we flourish. If we act in accord with that nature, there's a nature, there's a law in the universe, a natural law written on our heart. And no matter how much we want to be lords of it all, we're actually not. And so when we go against those things, it does harm. And sometimes we can harden our hearts and you know, we can be deceived enough to not realize that harm, but that doesn't mean the harm isn't happening.
Amy Hamilton is our guest, PhD scholar, researcher, writer, and speaker, and an extraordinary voice for this moment that we are living through. If you have questions about the Catholic response to the sexual revolution, if you have questions about these topics that we've covered, like liberation and what is good for the soul and what the relationship to the, of the soul to the body is, you are welcome to call, whether you're Catholic or not, whether you agree with us or not, 888-318-7884.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
There is tremendous power in prayer, because when we acknowledge that we don't have the power, but God does, things then begin to move for our good. Remember Matthew 19:26. But Jesus looked at them and said to them, "With men, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible." Now that's power.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's been 60 years since the full flowering of the sexual revolution, and we're talking with Amy Hamilton, a researcher and a linguist, and I know you're associated with the University of Texas in Austin, but also St. Thomas University. You work at both places.
University of St. Thomas in
University
Houston.
University of St. Thomas.
Yes,
yeah, right.
Yes.
And they know about this? The two schools know that you're moonlighting on them at somewhere? they're where?
University of St. Thomas in Houston has a wonderful master's in
Women's studies, right?
Women's studies, yeah. Right. And then they do a graduate studies certificate in the science of sex and gender, Catholic approaches to sexuality and gender. So it's an excellent program.
Okay, so I want to get to the positive view, and that is, since we're commemorating kind of 60 years of the sexual revolution, and I'm very glad to get to talk with you about it, we can just kind of harp on the failures, we can give the critiques, but is there a positive, what are we offering as Catholics that's worth somebody listening to say that might actually be something that is worthwhile in my own life, you know? We can slap everybody's hand and say, stop doing that. Or we can go beyond that and offer the positive vision. So what's the vision here? What is it?
Right. Well, again, then, I mean, I don't think we're necessarily slapping everybody's hand, right? Philippians... I think it's 2, talks about you hold forth the word of life in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. And so to be that voice of conscience, to say, this is not actually, you're not prospering. You're not flourishing. You're not going to reach the fulfillment, if even in human terms. All the data, wonderful data out of Institute for Family Studies, Brad Wilcox, and UVA, that grew there. You're going to actually be happier, healthier, wealthier if you marry.
Who's that researcher in England that you talked about one time? She said She was kind of a feminist who was like, I'm going to look into all this.
Oh, that's Louise Perry.
Louise Perry. And she came to that conclusion, like, you know what? Marriage is what works.
Yes. Yes. The Case Against the Sexual Revolution. She published that book in 2022, I believe.
Okay.
Maybe 21. I would highly recommend it. Again, because it gives evidence. I mean, there's something wrong if God's word says, you know, this is, you know, the church teaches marriage is between a, you know, man and a woman, and so that should lead to human flourishing, and it actually does, right? And that's been the way it's been for millennia. The data should bear out, is what I'm trying to say. The data should bear out that this actually leads to greater human flourishing.
And we can say that because Christ himself said, test everything. Keep what's good. Or was that St. Paul that said that? But either way, it's apostolic.
And so, yes, St. Paul.
But the idea that, look, it's okay to want evidence for these things. God doesn't just say, do it my way or else. And so if you look at the social science evidence for the Catholic view of marriage, permanent relationship between a man and a woman for the good of the spouses and the children, welcoming children, all that, you find out, oh, the social science actually bears this up.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, the I think, again, you just start looking at the ramifications of where we've tried to become masters of the universe. And, you know, and again, often with good intentions or just because the hubris is thinking that we know all the end from the beginning and that we're going to know how it plays out. So again, why would be, you know, babies are good. Why would we be against IVF? Well, you know, the millions of, the destruction of millions of embryos, right? And the freezing of millions of embryos, you know, we're either, you know, a pro-life from conception on or not.
Yeah.
And so you can't tinker with the system. You can't make adjustments because there are moral limits and you let, you know, again, you start, sowing the wind. And I think that's one example. So
When I talk about the positive vision, though, because I this is what I get from you. Like you mentioned Dr. Pakalik before. There is this thing of the modern person thinks happiness is related to me asserting myself, me, my life being in reference to myself. I get what I want. We got the notorious bucket list, which I think is the dumbest idea ever. If you're a Christian, don't have a bucket list. Mm-hmm. That's not what the Christian life is about. So, but do you see what I'm saying? But the image that you give when you talk about these things is this really healthy, like, community and family and interconnectedness as a totally different way of life than what the modern world is proposing.
Right. I mean, and again, they're being hammered with it in the media constantly, just pure straight out lies, right? Women, you'll be happier if you divorce your husbands. Oh, women, you'll be happier if you never marry in the first place. Single women are happier and wealthier. None of that is true.
No, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, Amy, but we know that the Cosmo magazine articles that in the 1970s that promoted that idea were made up. Do you know that? Have you heard this story?
No.
Cosmo magazine pushed the idea of sex and the single girl and go to the city and be, and every one of those stories that they published week after week after week were made up. There was false journalism. There's a record of it now.
You to know that. I didn't even know. But see, I'm not even I was born in 1970, so I'm talking about the New York Times and Washington Post in the last, you know, month, because it's a constant. And so I think because we, you know, as Christians, we talk about our battle is not against flesh and blood.
Right.
There's nefarious forces and, you know, the satanic realm that doesn't want a next generation, doesn't want the family to flourish, doesn't want any of us to understand He wants to destroy fatherhood. He doesn't want us to even be able to have a concept of what God, what a good and loving father might be.
Yeah.
So all of these things, I just have great compassion because they're being bombarded. And so even now, they're pushing polyamory and polygamy. And again, that monogamy is a restraint and a constraint. And again, the evidence bears out that you don't get any kind of outcome that surpasses a committed, lifelong, sexually complementary male-female relationship, especially if blessed with children. That gives the happiest outcome.
888-318-7884, the number. We'd love it if you'd call and talk about this with us. But Amy, here's the thing. I think the pushback on this is not it's going to say, well, you're against people. Here's what I'm afraid of, that people hear you saying these things and they think you're against persons. When I listen to you carefully, what you have been against is ideas. These ideas don't work. This is not true. These are the kinds of things that you say. So I want you, when we come back, I will get to these phones. Mm-hmm. The people that are on the phones, I'm going to get to you. But I want to challenge you a little bit with the person who comes back to you and says, well, you're against LGBT people or something.
What is the Catholic Church? Everyone seems to have an opinion, but the church never quite fits into the boxes people make for it. In The Faith Unboxed, author Andrew Petiprin looks at some of the most common boxes people put the Catholic Church in and explains why they don't fit. In doing so, he brings us closer to what the church really is, the institution founded by Christ. Order The Faith Unboxed today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun. And that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests. He does on-air debates. And he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
The Stigmata, the appearance of Christ's wounds on ordinary believers. Is it real or fake? What's the evidence? And if real, what could God's reason be for causing this? In God's Wounds, author John Clark offers what may be the most thorough, honest, and faithful reckoning with the stigmata ever written, examining the evidence and making sense of it both medically and spiritually. Order God's Wounds today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. Our guest today, Amy Hamilton, helping us reflect on 60 years of a full-fledged sexual revolution from a Catholic point of view. Amy Hamilton, Fulbright scholar, a sexuality researcher, and a fellow. She's an assistant professor, and she does research work at the University of Texas and at Austin. And you're going to have to say that because I'll get the order wrong, but it's St. Thomas
University of St. Thomas in Houston.
University of St. Thomas. And the cool thing about their women's studies program is it's the only one, I think, in the world that's from a Catholic perspective.
Yes. Yeah. So like you said, instead of saying, oh, all of these other, you know, viewpoints are wrong, let's articulate the truth. What would the Christian vision be?
I feel like it's hard to have an argument about transgenderism and the LGBTQ kind of life and the and acceptance of it and the pride flag and all of it, because I, and this may be a prejudice on my part, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I find that often people don't want to argue about it. They'll say, if you say, look, that's not really true what you're saying about, let's just say I took homosexual sex and I said, okay, but there is a basic biological difference. It can't produce children where heterosexual sex can produce children. There's somebody that wants to have an argument about that. There's more of a, why are you against the gay community? Why are you against queerness? Why are you against transgender children who, you know, need our compassion? Which to me is not an argument. It's a different thing.
Right.
So right. Help me with that. What do I do?
Well, I mean, the Christian vision for the human person is, I mean, Jesus said, I came that they might have life and have it more abundantly, right? The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. And so I would argue that ontologically, meaning in the essence of reality and the being, we are male and female. That's the revelation in Genesis. And we're embodied, just Jesus, the Word became incarnate. That's the truth of who we are. We're made in the image of God as male and female. These other categories, LGBT, they are descriptions of experiences, feelings, attractions, behaviors, self-perceptions, but they're not based in the reality of the body. And so to me, you're not against, I'm not against any person. What I actually am is for their highest good. That's the definition of love, to will the highest good of the beloved. And so, homosexual sex is against the law of God. It's very clear. It's always been very clear throughout church history, in Scripture.
Man, people will tell you it's not clear, though. I mean, I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying it's amazing how quickly we forgot.
Correct. That. Yes, I agree. But again, you have to be the one that states what has been forgotten.
Yeah, okay.
Okay? And that actually is that it was actually very, very clear up until, 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was slowly, as this individualistic society and self-expression and contraceptive sex and, divorce culture, those kinds of things opened the door for a greater acceptance of same-sex sexuality. Because if sex no longer has a connection to children, right? If heterosexuals can have sex just for pleasure, not in marriage, and shut off the procreative aspect, well then, why should that morally be different than we're having sex for pleasure based on our relationship, not based in marriage? So yep. It opens those. So your whole society is changing, kind of its perception because of this sexual libertinism. But the truth is that homosexual sex frustrates the purposes of the body sexually in terms of the procreative, or it actually harms the body,
yeah.
Right? And so if you're willing the good of the human person, you have to will the good of the body. All transgender procedures involving medicalization, they all harm the body.
Right.
So if you're just looking at the human person as an embodied person, we all know how it is to be sick. You don't choose sickness.
Right.
People who are sick try to get well, right? Chronic illness is a cross to bear. You want to alleviate symptoms. So to actually choose something that's going to destroy physical health is not a path of flourishing. And so again, people have, when they get the telos wrong of sex, it's about pleasure, right?
Okay, again, the number is 888-318-7884. And I said I'd go back to the callers, but we apparently have not kept the callers on the line. So that means the lines are free for you if you'd like to get in on the conversation, 888-318-7884. It does seem to me that in some ways the original sin of all of this, and we do end up talking about LGBTQ and transgender and all that, but the original sin is the point at which we divorced sex from marriage and procreation. And so, if I may, what is the argument against? It seems to me that that all points back to contraception, probably the contraceptive pill most particularly. What's the argument against contraception? Can you help me with that? Because that will help me with this. Because I think, frankly, one of the reasons that so many people are so willing to go along with all of the sexual revolution is they just don't want anyone to take the pill away from them. So what's wrong with that? What's wrong with the pill?
I understand that, you know. And I got to be honest. I mean, I dealt with same-sex attraction, you know, till my mid-30s, and then I married at 37. And so stewarding my fertility was not an issue.
Right.
I mean, I had to, you know, I repented, and I had, you know, 10 years of, you know, celibacy. I'm trying to pursue chastity and so forth. So I had to, everybody has to steward their sexuality. But in actually stewarding fertility, that wasn't an aspect. So, you know, it's interesting, Cy, that you would say that. I think the people have written and speak far more eloquently on this than I. But for me, when you sever that, when you refuse the fertility aspect, right? When you refuse the responsibility, when you demand sex without any responsibility of potential life, and so it's dehumanizing to both partners. And I get people who are like, oh, but you know, oh, that's just fancy, you know, language. We don't want to have we don't want to have children that we can't take care of. But I want you to think about what it's done to women.
Okay.
I want you to think about what it's done to women. The women are expected to take a hormonal contraceptive pill that changes their libido, that makes them gain weight, makes them irritable, makes them at risk of blood clots, you know, it affects their future fertility so that they can be sexually available at all times whenever a male wants them.
Yeah.
I mean, people have put it in really crass ways, but that's what the woman is supposed to be open season. And the way you do that is by completely disrupting her normal God-given healthy body.
Right. So yeah. There's nothing wrong with her.
So there's that first seed of, I'm going to harm the body in order to maximize my sexual pleasure.
Or someone else's sexual pleasure.
Well, exactly.
I'm sorry. I interrupted you.
No, you're not. My husband says I'm interrupting. Like I'm contributing. No, you're good. Okay. No, I don't take it as an absolutely right. So and this is mostly from a male perspective, right? And then how does it harm the male? Because then his sexual energy does not have to be subdued, right? It doesn't have to be subjugated to anything other than, his desire. So his partner's supposed to be open season on the woman. And that's why you get this horrific results of, you know, quote unquote, unwanted pregnancies. And then you better get that abortion. You know, I will kill you. I will kill the baby. I will spike your drink with abortion pills. I will pressure you. Because I have a right to your body.
Yeah. That sense of entitlement becomes
zero responsibility towards you, right? And if it's zero responsibility towards you, it's certainly zero responsibility towards any child that you might conceive. And so that the hardening of the heart in males and females just becoming honestly sexual chattel, you know, we have to be open. I think it's just tragic.
I feel like if baseball players were taking chemicals as strong as women are taking in order to improve their they would be banned from baseball. But every woman is expected to take these.
Well,
and
I think too it's that short-sighted, right? We don't want to have to and I get look, I hear you. I think that we always have to have compassion and always ask God, like, what your love, your truth, is not burdensome. It's not burdensome. So what's your answer? So even you know, individuals like Nancy Pelosi, you know, so rabidly, you know, for abortion, and that's just was such a hallmark of her entire life advocacy. And I remember, you know, hearing her say, you know, I had four or five children?
I think she has five children.
Five children under the age of five. So she had them very close together, you know. And so like, Lord, was she just so overwhelmed that that just seared her into her? So how do we support women? Right. But if you actually, you know, teach, you know, NFP, natural family planning, it's actually healthier and leads to better relationships. It leads to better relationship because husband and wife, hopefully in the marital union, like you're working with the rhythms of your bodies.
Well, what if I feel like if a young man were to say to a young woman, I don't want you to take those because I don't want you to do that to your body. That's too much. I feel like that's a gracious thing to say, and that so that if he can participate in the you know, that you have these married couples participate in the kind of regulating of their own sex life according to her cycle, in a sense he's taking a burden on himself of attentiveness to her that that the man who just wants her to be chemically kind of sterilized for the month, he doesn't take on that attentiveness. He doesn't do that.
And you know, he doesn't get the same wife. Because she's actually altered by...
Oh, that's
no,
a great point.
No, I'm very
point.
Serious.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
She is taking on a burden, and she's actually altered in her own emotions, mood, and health. And what they don't know is how that's sabotaging future desires for children, right? Future fertility. Why is every... So suddenly we contracept and we prohibit, you know, we prevent pregnancy through the most fertile years. And then in the 30s... You know, when it's harder to get pregnant, we start trying to get pregnant. And then all these years of hormonal contraceptions in the body are supposed to have had no effect. We want to shut it down completely for years. And then at a flip of a switch, we're supposed to turn it back on. And then there's the predatory fertility industry ready and waiting to say, oh, you've aged your cervix through these hormonal contraceptions, you know, contraceptives. So now we're here and we're going to pump you full of more hormones to give you IVF and you're going to lose. It's a destructive cycle when it would be just so much, you know, better to embrace, oh, sex has responsibility and we're going to mutually steward this gift. And the other thing that, you know, Catherine Pokalik's research has pointed out is the fertility. We talk about the birth dearth, you know, and then she's got her wonderful book, you know, Hannah's Children, about the women who are defying the birth dearth, you know. But in general, across the board, women have one fewer children than a child than they would want if they say their ideal fertility. So there's all these hidden costs, the things that we don't see.
Yeah, we don't talk about them. I have to take a quick break, but we're going to come back. I am going to get to the callers. I promise. There's folks on the line. I will get to you. If you just don't go away this time, I'll get back to you. 60 years now of the full-fledged, full-bore sexual revolution. Everything is different now in many ways in our culture than it was 60 years ago. Of course, it's not the only thing that has changed. And so, you know, we can't always equate easily cause and effect in any human system. I mean, what humans are involved in is multi-layered and complex. But it does look pretty obvious that some things have gone wrong directly as a consequence of the sexual revolution. That is what we were talking about with our guest, mother, linguist, researcher, and all-around helpful person, Amy Hamilton. Your calls welcome, 888-318-7884.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You know, I have never seen women who want to be equal absolutely degrading themselves. And yet the media degrades your nature, your beauty as a woman, your goodness. Let us pray. At some point, our dear Lord touches their hearts.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. Amy Hamilton, our guest. You'll also be one of the speakers at our Catholic Answers annual conference this year. So, Chris Stefanik's going to be there. Dr. David Anders is going to be there. Look, I could just stop right there, and that'd be enough. You should come for those two. And then I add Dr. Amy Hamilton's going to be there, our guest today. And what are you going to talk about at the conference? Are you going to talk about this stuff, or what are you going to talk about?
I guess I'll talk about this stuff.
But in the context of evangelism.
In the context of evangelism, yeah.
Yeah, because it's funny how the biggest block to evangelization for several years, I don't know if it still is today, was the person who said, I just hate how the Catholic Church treats gay people. Like, that was it. Like, that was the main objection we were running up against. And I think that's being healed a little bit, but...
Not just the Catholic Church, every Christian church that stood firm on the issue of homosexuality gets accused of,
hate
and lack of compassion and so forth.
Right.
When, again, all the data shows that you can have record high, affirmation and acceptance. It doesn't change the fact that, it doesn't ameliorate the higher suicidality, depression, anxiety, and so forth, because again, you're violating the law written on the heart,
and expressed in the body. I mean, the body tells you what
it's
for.
Exactly, yeah. And actually, to affirm is to imprison people in a life and a false identity with that they actually have a lot of potential to come out of that.
All right, let's go. I said I'd go to the phones. I get tempted when Dr. Amy Hamilton is here to not let the calls come in, because I enjoy these conversations. Mm-hmm. I really do love talking with you about this, Amy.
Oh, thanks.
I feel like you have a grasp on it that very few people have. By the way, if you want to come to the conference, go to CatholicAnswersConference.com. CatholicAnswersConference.com. Matthew in Lynchburg, Virginia. Thank you, Matthew. Oh, wait, did I push the wrong button? Matthew in Lynchburg, Virginia, watching on YouTube. Welcome, Matthew, there.
Hello.
Oh, hey, Matthew. Yeah, I was having trouble with the buttons. Go ahead with your question.
Hi. So just to briefly sum it up, my girlfriend and I are determined to keep our relationship godly and holy. We have good boundaries. We don't engage in sexual intercourse. We don't plan to. We're both virgins. But whenever she comes to my apartment, we live about 3 hours from each other. She stays the night, I sleep on the couch, but she always wants me to sleep in the same bed. And she says, what's the harm if we're not engaging in sex? And a lot of my secular friends also say, hey, if you can't get to know somebody unless you live with them. And I know as Catholics, we're not supposed to cohabitate. I know one of those reasons is, the near occasion of sin for sex. So what are the other reasons to not cohabitate, or is that the only reason, or am I missing something? Thank you.
Wait, can I just clarify something? Are you planning on getting married?
If it ends up progressing to that stage,
Okay. All right. So
I'm saving myself for marriage. Yeah. Sorry.
Right. But it wasn't. It's not a permanent. You don't have plans for a permanently virginal life, which is. Some people do, but I just wanted to be clear on what you're intending to marry. You don't know if it'll be this young woman, but at some point you're going to marry. What might you say to them regarding their current relationship? Amy?
Oh, well, Matthew, how old are you? May I ask how old you are?
I'm 24.
Matthew, well, God bless you. First of all, I just want to, you know, praise God for his work in your life and that you've committed yourself to chastity. And so that right there, you've already increased your odds of actually having a successful marriage because any premarital sex actually increases the odds of divorce. The data is clear on that. And so why not cohabitate? Because it's practicing for divorce. I mean, that's the data. I heard a wonderful talk on even from a secular perspective, if you want a successful marriage, don't cohabitate because it increases the risks. This young lady, if you're not even engaged, so you're still discerning if this is the one that you're going to propose to, and she's discerning whether she would say yes to you, why would you be sleeping in the same bed? that's a level of intimacy that that is a near occasion of sin, and to me would, I think of that verse, it's in Proverbs, but where the wife, as she does good to her husband all the days of her life. And so I just think, again, think of your future wife, whether it's this young lady or another young lady especially. I don't see how sleeping in the same bed would be doing good, you know, to your future spouse all the days of her life. So I think you're honoring your girlfriend because you're not at that stage. You haven't made that commitment, whether sex is involved or not. That's just my humble opinion. But I think you're being wise.
What do you think, Matthew?
I think, yeah, that's kind of what I talk about, but she kind of brings up that, you know, we have good boundaries and we maintain those boundaries, but I mean, I don't know. I never looked at it from, I guess, the emotional intimacy way, mm-hmm. but, I guess, is there anything in, I guess, church teaching that I could learn from? Even though she's not Catholic, maybe we could find some common ground. Or is there anything even in, I guess, Protestant traditions that you guys are aware of that talks about this?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Timothy says flee youthful lusts. And so you have good boundaries, but why test those boundaries? Why put yourself in a more difficult situation? I just feel like that's you're being incredibly wise, and I don't understand why. You know, you're not ready to take the step of marriage, and so I just don't know why you would why she would be pushing to share the same bed. I'm just being honest. The other thing is, again, I'm blanking. You know, just to not give the appearance of
scandal.
Evil.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't give scandal to other people. I you're a person of extraordinary strength.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So. I don't know many 24-year-old men who are, and God bless you for that. But I'd ask you this, Matthew: what if you don't marry her, and then mm-hmm. you have the same virginal relationship with the next woman and you do marry her? How's she going to feel about the fact that you were sleeping with another woman in a, you know, not in the sense that we usually use the phrase sleeping with, but if you do things out of season, mm-hmm. there's consequences for that, Matthew.
Yeah. Oh, believe me, yeah.
But you asked us other than the near occasion of sin. And so I think both of us have attempted to answer your question, which was other than the near occasion of sin. But I will also leave you with this. Why go beyond other than the near occasion of sin? You're supposed to avoid the near occasion of sin. Like, mm-hmm. why did you want more than that? That's mm-hmm. enough of an answer.
Yeah, I guess. I guess I just wanted something that would satisfy her. Just because we're talking through our faith differences right now.
Oh, I see.
The other part of my question was about dating and marrying a non-Catholic, but that's obviously off topic for the segment.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So I didn't. Yeah.
You know what? You're right. It is, and I'm actually not going to even get to the next. I told you this was going to happen. People call at the last minute, mm-hmm. and it's not you, Matthew. It's the other callers. I'm not going to be able to get to because they called late. But call back, and we'll talk about that. Because I mean, I married a non-Catholic, and I can tell you about the experience of, look, you, the truth is, I have no regrets, but I know I made my life harder and I made her life harder. Like, I know we both made each other's life harder. So if you're prepared for marriage is very hard, if you're prepared for it to be harder than that, then marry someone that you don't share the basic beliefs with. But we could talk about it another time, Matthew, because I have to say goodbye, as a matter of fact, because we're about to go. I want to thank our guest, Amy Hamilton. Where can people find your work,
Amy? AmyHamilton.org.
AmyHamilton.org. Apparently, AmyHamilton.com was taken. That other Amy Hamilton.
Yeah, I'm so tired of her. Squatting on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good. Check out AmyHamilton.org and come to our conference, Catholic Answers Conference. Dr. Hamilton, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much, Sly.
That'll do it for us. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live. I'm just going to